Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
WICC 600's Tony and Melissa in the Morning present Community Inspiration. Ordinary people doing extraordinary things in our own backyard.
So if you follow any local artists out there, you may know this man as Zabbi. That's what he goes by. But we know him as Brad Rumble. He's a 26-year-old from Stamford, and he knew right away that he wanted to create rap music. But he also wanted to balance his career choices with his Christian beliefs. That's a pretty tall task when you talk about that industry. But he was able to accomplish it, and that's what made him this week's community inspiration.
Growing up, I kind of had a musical ear. You know, I played the piano in church. At school, I played the flute, saxophone. And when high school came around, I didn't fully dive into it the way I desired to. But, you know, I had some friends of mine that did music, you know, hip-hop. And from that was where I recognized I kind of had a talent for it and a knack for it. And I just began to kind of draw the potential that was on the inside of me at the beginning. I was like, wow, I'm pretty good.
And I've heard you. You are very good. But I have to be honest, Brad, when you first think rap, I don't know about anybody listening, but for myself, I think Jay-Z. I think Kanye West. I'll even think maybe an Eminem. So when you say Christianity and rap, it's very hard to mix the two together, to be honest, when you first hear it. So what were some of the challenges you found before you finally got started in Christian rap?
So the challenges for me, and definitely just like from, you know, other pockets and other circles, are just definitely verbiage and just like language that is used, because, you know, as scripture says that we are a new creation, the biggest thing is learning how to speak differently, learning how to speak life opposed to, you know, speaking lies or fabrication or inevitably death, and learning how to not only just write things that speak life, but actually be held accountable to the things that are spoken. And so for me, that was my biggest challenge, where I was like, okay, someone's going to test you or check you to say, hey, like, the things that you're writing about, are these true? And so for me, it was, all right, you know, the level of purity that I want to speak about, the level of, you know, change and transformation that I talk of, it has to first stem and flow from my life, not just from my words. So that was a really big challenge. But it was also an encouragement, because what it did is it first held me accountable to actually live out the life that I was speaking about. When other people began to hear it, they got challenged. But me watching their process of going through that challenge encouraged me to keep going, because it made me recognize I wasn't the only one pursuing change in my life.
So Brad Rumble, you started your rapping career right around the 2011 year, somewhere around there. How have you grown since beginning your career?
It has been a whirlwind. I can say that when I started, I was rapping beforehand without any God in it. I started around 2007. I gave my life to the Lord, and I had this encounter where he met me. He was actually calling me into the gift that he had placed inside of me, but now to change the direction. I'm still kind of coming from a mindset of putting my gift on display, but recognizing what the reasons behind it were for. Definitely has shifted to a point now where at first I was like, you know what, this is my gift and I want people to see it. But what happened was, when I began to go more places and you know, meet more people, and then recognize that there was really ground-shaking transformation not only taking place in the lives of the people that heard it, but inevitably the people that were around them, because they were being affected too. What made me recognize, like, wow, like, this is deeper than music. This is bringing transformation to communities. My passion for my gift began to transition to my passion for community and my passion for people, and just seeing hope be returned back to the life of someone that felt like they never had it was just a most rewarding things. As time has progressed now, the way I like to put it is, I have a love for music, but it is not my passion. My passion is for people. And so I just use the gifts that God has given me to help spread it as best I can. And I know music is very influential. So I know God didn't make a mistake when he kind of gave me the best weapons to use to infiltrate community, as well as, you know, an entire hip hop genre, which is all about sometimes tearing people down or just saying, hey, I'm better than you. This is more about, I want to build with you and I want to love on you and I want to help encourage and shape the way that your future is going to be.
Which is such an amazing message that I don't think could be said enough. And I think we live in a world, unfortunately, Brad, where we have young people who have society pulling at them in different directions, and there are a lot of pressures out there. What would be your message to, even if people aren't interested in music, but young artists, young athletes, just young people in general, if they have a dream, but they feel, hey, you know what, I have to change the person I am, because maybe they won't accept that I'm a Christian, or maybe they won't accept my ideas about this, or maybe I'm going to get judged. You put yourself out there. You, I'm sure, have taken the good and the bad criticism. You know, God makes it where it's not easy when he gives you gifts always. What would be your message to a young person who, very much like you, has a gift, but maybe feels, hey, you know what, I'm not going to put myself out there. It's too much of a risk, and I'm going to get criticized.
Yeah, I wish I would have been able to see the outcome before I made the decision. And, you know, that's just the entire thing about faith, is that you don't really know how it's going to work out, but you believe that it is. And definitely for myself, you know, being a believer at 17, right out of high school, was difficult. And then all the more, you know, using my gifts that people knew about, of how I used it before, and a lot of people were upset. But what I recognized actually over time is that the people that, you know, initially rejected me or didn't understand, and because of their understanding, you know, pulled away, one by one, in private, they would message me and they would want to have conversations, because in reality, life goes on, and life gets difficult, and there's only so much that people that are your friends that don't have life can do for you, because if they don't have life, they can't give it to you. And so what I was recognizing was, wow, like, there are people that are broken, and they're actually just waiting for that one person to be brave and to trust in the beliefs that God has given them, so that in return, God will use them to help set them free. And so at the end of it, what I recognized is, you know what, like, if it takes that one person to be brave, it takes that one person to be bold, and to stand up for the sake of others, that will be in a span of time opposed to the immediate gratification that I desire. You know what? Like, it's all worth it.
Every time you think about either an artist or somebody who puts themselves out there in the spotlight, I know we get it, even being in radio, immediately you're in the public eye. I think a lot of times people, you know, look for the fame or look for the recognition. What would you say is your ultimate goal? What are you, I know that you were given a gift, but what is your goal? Why do you do this?
One of my favorite pastors and motivational speakers, Miles Monroe, who passed away in 2014, he said his viewpoint of success is carrying out the full capacity of purpose that God has placed on your life. And so for me, success is all just based about doing everything that God has called me to do for this 80 to 100 years in the span of time that he's given me. And honestly, I think that there is just so much brokenness on the earth that he has called me to touch and to reach in as many ways that I can. And I just think that music is one of them. The way that I heard it is a scripture that Jesus says. He says, you know, like, therefore go out into all of the earth, and the gates of hell will not prevail. And the way that I began to understand that as I got older is that gates are meant for defense, meaning that, you know, we are on the offensive to take back ground. So when, you know, you look into the world and you see, like, wow, like, there's so much darkness, there's so much poverty, there's so many injustices, like there's so much of it, like, what can we possibly do, or is our effect even going to be effective? But what I recognize is that it has to be a day-by-day process, a step-by-step process, and recognizing that if there's a light switch in a room that is dark, when you turn that switch on, the darkness doesn't linger. When the light comes in, the darkness is gone. But the currents and the watts have to believe that the light inside of them will eradicate the darkness. So for me, that's just my driving force, believing that one day there will be complete light filling this land. And I just believe that it's through Jesus, but it's just me taking my steps every day, believing that the darkness will not overcome.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Brad Rumble. And if people want to find your music, or do you have a YouTube channel or anything like that, where can people find you?
Yeah, so people can find me pretty much every platform, Spotify, iTunes, as Zabbai, Z-A-B-B-A-I. I'm on the same on YouTube. I have a Zabbai 203 representing, you know, my home, Connecticut. and Twitter, Facebook, all on the same name, Zabai.
Zabai. So should I have been calling you that this whole time?
I have many names.
And to hear a sample of his work, we have it right here. Just a little snippet. Check it out.
You trust in your own direction, but that'll never get you to your destination. Thinking you right is a figment of your imagination. He gonna make your path straight if you just have faith. He already moving. You just gotta meet him halfway.
Daydream all day.
It's 9:30. Do you know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
And today we have Rowena White on because we heard that the mayor could not come on, but she's the director of communication. She's basically the right-hand woman to Mayor Joe Ganim, and she joins us live now. Rowena, good morning.
Good morning. How are you? Mayor definitely extends his apologies for this last-minute emergency switchover.
Yeah. He's a busy guy. He's a really busy guy, and you're busy too, so we just appreciate being able to connect with you.
All right. Sure. Ro, let's start it off on a somber note. The firefighter, the hit and run during the Barnum Fest fireworks, he was hurt pretty badly, but he seems to be on the mend. At least everything that I've read, he seems to be getting better every day. Any leads on that case? Anything moving forward?
Well, actually, that's why I wanted to talk about that this morning. So his condition has been touch and go. So at first, what we thought was minor injuries ended up being multiple serious injuries to his chest cavity. Since being in the hospital, our firefighter has gone through multiple surgeries, at least six that we're aware of. He's still in ICU. His condition in the overnight did improve. He is breathing with the respirator, or actually they took the respirator off to see if he could breathe through the overnight on his own. He did also sustain minor brain bleeding. So this is a serious accident that took place. And we are looking for the public's help in identifying the vehicle.
So this was a lot serious than they first thought.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
So wait, do we have any leads, though, Rowena? Like any type of car model, color, anything like that?
Yes, we do. So actually, you are the first to hear it. So breaking live on WICC this morning, the Bridgeport Police Department Traffic Division are seeking the public's assistance to identify the vehicle in the hit and run. And it is identified as a dark gray Toyota Corolla. They're thinking it's possibly a year 2015. And this vehicle should have sustained some front end damage and will be missing the driver's side rear view mirror. And we'll be posting that on the city and the Bridgeport Police Department's social media pages shortly.
Okay. All right. Ro, whoever did this, they have ice water in their veins. How do you just drive off like that? That's beyond my comprehension, I got to tell you. So hopefully he'll be doing a lot better as the days go on.
Yeah, and we definitely, again, so you heard it right here from Rowena, that is breaking this morning, that they are looking for here in Bridgeport a dark gray Toyota Corolla, kind of a newer model. It's a 2015, that they're thinking it's 2015, probably has some front end damage and is probably missing the driver's side mirror. So again, that is new information. And certainly if you know anything about this, police certainly want to hear from you right away. Again, just an awful situation, but we do appreciate you sharing that with us. We do want to kind of switch gears a little bit just on
I'm sorry to interrupt. Can I switch gears? Because I have a special guest who just walked into my office.
Of course you can.
I'm going to give you Mayor Joe Ganim.
Whoa! Rowena White! Turning the microphone over.
I'm not as articulate as Rowena White, our communication.
What's going on this show right now? This is wild.
You know what? So what happened was I had a doctor's appointment this morning, simple as that.
Okay.
I wasn't sure I'd be back in time, and I've been in the... So I'm back, and I wanted to just touch base on a couple of things and appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
Sure.
Go for it.
Well, a couple of things that are going to be coming up, and I know it was great that Ro touched on certainly some very important things that are important to disseminate information on, our firefighter and so on. Also, though, you're going to be hearing about, hopefully, an expansion and a reinstatement of the senior tax break on property taxes for Bridgeport residents, focused on seniors, and then it's income driven. So we're going to get out with that and try and provide some relief additional relief to taxpayers in the city of Bridgeport, focused on seniors, and driven by income. And then the second thing, these are three kind of bigger things to keep an eye on between now and next week, is formation of education task force. An education task force is going to work with the Board of Ed on some of the challenges that they've been facing, and looking to extend now to the next step of our school capital program that the city started way back when I was a young mayor in the early 90s, that resulted in the rebuilding of many of our high schools, some of our middle schools, and now we're going to go on to look at some of the other buildings that are in the city that are great schools, but maybe in line for capital improvements or for new schools. So I want to talk about that. Maybe we can talk more about it next week. And public safety, especially what's happened at the Green Homes, and how we're going to tackle that collectively with a group of individuals from City Hall, with elected officials, and push this thing to the point where it needs to be, which we've been talking about for the last 3 years, a safer living environment for every resident in the city of Bridgeport, with a focus right now on some of our more troubled, most troubled areas, which is Green Homes. And I don't know if people know what Green Homes are, but stay tuned, because we're gonna be working hard to make improvements there as we do across the city.
Yeah, I mean, if you do want to touch on it at all, Mayor, just because that is something that certainly we were very concerned about hearing on the 4th of July, that this young man lost his life, the 10th homicide that we've now seen in Bridgeport. It doesn't matter if it's 1, 10, 20. It's certainly...
Of course. It's
horrible.
Sure. Any shooting, any act of violence, certainly the results in a homicide or loss of life is tragic. I spoke to the mother last night, and certainly, you know, this is not anything you want to be able to be let go, or certainly not to happen in the first place anywhere in the world, but our focus is in our city. I went in when I first got elected 3 years ago and did a documentary on Green Homes, and we sent it down to the secretary, wasn't even in office yet, but the leadership at HUD in Washington physically brought it down there. We talked about and visited Washington for the replacement of those housings, for the decommissioning there, and are tackling that. We'll go in with a task force later this week, and we'll bring the health department, the police department, the fire department, building code, and we're going to document every inch of those buildings, and we're going to talk to the residents there about how we want to make this transition into better living environment, better place for them to raise their families. Many are handicapped. And so it's going to be a full court press. It may result in me going to Washington next week. I mean, that's kind of in the cards right now, if that's what it takes. And the Housing Authority has been great in working with us on this.
Wow. Mayor Ganim, could you hold on? You have no place to
sure,
go, right?
Hold on.
You got nothing going on. All right, hold on. Just stick with us just for a moment. We've got to take a little break here, and then we'll come right back with a little bit more with Mayor Joe Ganim.
And we have Bridgeport Mayor Joe Ganim live with us this morning, talking about really all things Bridgeport. We did start off the segment talking about the hit and run, the firefighter who is still in the hospital, really going through a very rough time, and being able to learn about what some police have just released some information about the suspect's car and who they're pursuing now and how you can help them out. Also, we were just talking about the 10th homicide investigation and how it may prompt you, Mayor, to have to go to Washington, D.C. to talk about some of the housing and the complex where that shooting happened. I think my only quick question on that is, there was something in the Bridgeport police report showing that this man had to do with drugs and dealing drugs in that area. Is that one of the many things that goes on at the Greens complex? Is that some of the things that the Housing Authority is looking at, or are there other things that we just don't know about?
So, Melissa, it's me.
Oh,
again.
Rowena, this is the most fun show ever. Rowena, I just saw your text message. Me again. Thank goodness. Hi, how are you?
Great. So I can actually answer some of those questions.
Great.
So yes. So unfortunately, you know, there is a level of criminal activity that does take place in and around the Greens homes. And some of what ends up happening is that it affects the quality of life for other residents there. So the sooner we get in there and we can address it, both with the security elements, the safety elements, the health hazards, and all of those things at large, that, you know, the sooner we can get these folks to a better place and improve their quality of life at large.
Yeah, so we can certainly understand where they need to address some of those things, not just with this case, but just in general. You could see where there's a need to kind of go over that.
Absolutely. One of those things is definitely, you know, some of the security elements. You know, we understand that there's elevators in there that frequently break down, and folks are, end up being, especially if they're handicapped, they end up being, you know, entrapped in their own homes. So that's definitely one of the issues that we're looking at as well. We hear that sometimes the door locks on the outside either get broken or breached. You know, how do we address that? So there's a handful of things that the city is going to be partnering with Park City Communities, the Housing Authority, and trying to look at that and you know, figure out, is it something that we immediately fix now, or is it something that we put on the list and we say, okay, when we're building a new property, these are the things that we need to be aware of.
All right, Rowena, let's talk a little bit about the Park City Picking It Up neighborhood cleanup that's happening this weekend. What's going on there?
Sure. So Park City Picking It Up is the mayor's initiative to clean neighborhood by neighborhood throughout the city. And we've been just kind of going through each one of the sections. And this weekend on Saturday at 9 o'clock, we're going to be over at the Reservoir Community Farm area. And that's on Reservoir Avenue, Soundview Avenue, and Sylvan Avenue. We have volunteers who are great to come out. Some of those volunteers are from the Rescue Mission. Some of them are from the Mayor's Conservation Corps. Kids. It's just a great effort, and we're fortunate enough the last few weekends that we hosted these to have some good weather. And we go through with the volunteers picking up the litter, and then we also send DPF with the Department of Public Facilities along to help pick up the bags of the litter, and then also MadVac, which is those street vacuums that go along the curb lines to help get any residue off of the streets, which also helps, by the way, clear our sewer lines. So if there's a rain, we need those lines clear so that we don't get flooding.
Well, certainly good to know about that. And also we have Rowena White on, who is the Director of Communications at the office of course, Mayor Joe Ganim. It's been like the Team Joe and Ro game today. It's been awesome being able to talk to both of you.
I know. He's right here, too. He just got off. Hold on one second.
Oh, wait.
Hey, you guys, I hope you guys are still working this morning.
I can't handle this. This is too much. This should be like, I need to put this. This is going to be on our podcast, just so everyone knows, because you can't make this stuff up. This is live radio, everyone.
This is live radio. Hey, Rowena is better at this than I am, too.
You guys are
great. No, that was a call from a very important state official that came in between, and I would share the conversation with you, although I don't know that I'm at liberty to. But it's about possible projects in Bridgeport that need the support on a state level, and so that's all possible. Positive. But back to these topics, which are consistent with all of that, really important stuff, really good stuff in the city, on a kind of a bigger picture that people need to know, and through the radio, I think, can kind of get a glimpse of. We want to keep providing property tax relief. We're going to see something come out, hopefully go to the city council in a couple weeks for extended property tax relief for seniors or income-driven. And we want to have a major initiative on education with building reconstruction, new schools that we've continued on a program and ended up with Harding High School. It ended up with almost a new central high school. Bassett's going to be first, front, and center. But some of the middle schools, even up in the north end, whether it's Hooker or Winthrop or Blackham, some of the older schools. And I say those without knowing the priorities of what a study would show, but I'm going to want to work with the Board of Education on that and the new leadership there, whoever and however that may take shape. And certainly going to be over at Green Homes, probably as early as this week, and maybe in Washington with an application or the beginnings of an application to change that environment dramatically.
Yeah, absolutely.
I call it decommissioning or tearing those buildings down, bluntly, but I don't want to get the residents worked up yet until we get a chance to dialogue with them and let them know that we're working constructively for a better, safer environment for them and hopefully for everyone in the city.
Sure. We have Mayor Joe Ganim, who's been on here. Also, Rowena White, you're in charge of your Director of Communications.
We like to call her Director of Communications. She directs it, the communications. And wherever they go, but she's directs it. So if it goes in the wrong direction, you blame her. If it's good, you know, give me credit.
Give you credit. We're calling it the Joe and Ro Show. That's what it is. Tony and Melissa now has become
you
the Joe and Ro Show.
And Joe. I don't care. Joe
and Ro. Well, Mayor Joe Ganim, we appreciate both of you for coming on this morning. And of course, like I said, we're going to have all of this up on our podcast. We'll be checking back in with you guys next week. And we hope you guys have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Hey, Bill, what about that Wednesday wisdom thing you do so well?
Well, I want to do one from CD number one, Advice from Mocha. And this one here, one of my favorites, It is called the Wooden Bowl. And it goes like this. A frail old man went to live with his son, daughter-in-law, and four-year-old grandson. The old man's hands trembled, his eyesight was blurred, and his step faltered. The family ate together at a table, but the elderly grandfather's shaky hands and failing sight made eating difficult. Peas rolled off his spoon onto the floor, and when he grabbed the glass of milk, that milk spilled on the tablecloth. Well, the son and daughter-in-law became irritated with the man. "We must do something about father," said the son. "I've had enough of his spilled milk, noisy eating, and food on the floor." So the husband and wife set a small table in the corner. There, grandfather ate alone while the rest of the family enjoyed dinner. Since grandfather had broken a dish or two in time, his food was served in a wooden bowl. When the family glanced at the grandfather's direction, sometimes he had a tear in his eye as he sat alone. Still, the only words the couple had for him were sharp admonitions when he dropped a fork or spilled some food. The four-year-old watched it all in silence. One evening, before supper, the father noticed the son playing with wood scraps on the floor. He asked the child sweetly, "What are you doing?" He just as sweetly replied, "Oh, I'm making a little bowl for you and Mama to eat your food in when I grow up." The four-year-old smiled and went back to his work. Well, the words were so struck by the parents that they were speechless. Then tears started to stream down their cheeks. Though no words were spoken, both knew what must be done. That evening, her husband took the grandfather's hand and gently led him back to the family table. For the remainder of his days, he ate every meal with the family. And for some reason, neither husband nor wife seemed to care any longer when a fork was dropped, milk spilled, or the tablecloth was soiled.
Yeah. You see, out of the mouth of babes, you see?
Exactly. It's very honest and very unbiased.
Yes, very much so. And the kid was innocent. He was just like,
just saying, "Hey, I'm going to get older. They're going to need the same thing." Because you know what? That's something that we miss as adults. And whether we have the kids directly, they're our children, or we just are around kids, I'm saying this from a teacher's perspective, that we have such influence on kids, they watch us just intently. Now, the older they get, the less they pay attention to us, of course.
Yeah, you're right.
And by late teenagers, they're not even listening anymore. But early on, when they're formative years, they are watching us at every move, every word that comes out of your mouth, appropriate or inappropriate, your mannerisms, all of that. They are just like a recorder. They just are recording everything. Be careful.
You're absolutely right. You know, and you see these things, come back to you as the years go on, you know, like mm-hmm. for example, it's a stupid thing, and it's a ridiculous thing. But I remember when the kids were younger, we'd be at the dinner table, and I would, you know, they would want juice or whatever the case was, and I would pour the juice into a glass, but I would pour it and I would raise the carton or the bottle like really high, and there was this big stream of juice that would go into the glass, and the kids thought that was hysterical. It was just like, "Ah, look at that," you know. My wife would be like, "Tone," you know. All right flash forward whatever it is 15 years later, 18 years later, whatever it is, and we're over at my son's house, and his girlfriend says, "Could you pour me a little soda? Don't you think that that's the way he pours the soda?"
Really?
Yeah. And his girlfriend goes, mm-hmm. "Why do you always do that?" And my wife goes, "Because my stupid husband used to pour the juice for them just like that when they were kids. And they'd always get a big laugh out of it." But what I'm saying is, it's things that you're not even thinking about. It just kind of falls into place, you know, a little innocent thing like that.
It's more with your kids because you're on front stage with them all the time.
Right.
Even if you're in a store. I mean, next time you're in a store, just a store paint, you know, you're just doing whatever, and you're in your own little world and maybe waiting in line or looking at something, just pause for a moment and just glance around. And see if you see a child, especially one that's, I would say, less than six, in your area, and just notice that they are watching you.
Yes,
they're just watching you. Mm-hmm. It's not anything more than they're just watching. So be careful what you do, because you're going to affect other kids, you know, children or other kids, right, in other families. It's just that you just keep notice of that.
Whatever you do, they're going to copy. That's true.
And your absolutely. Neighbors are probably, you know, pouring soda like that too.
so ridiculous. It's just, yeah. All right, Bill, thank you very much.